The New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project is a collaboration between anthropologists at New Mexico State University and the Oral History Program at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The goal of the project was to record the memories of New Mexicans who grew up in rural parts of the state in the first half of the 20th century. This podcast brings together some of those stories. We continue our journey into the land of enchantment by exploring one of the most essential parts of growing up in early 20th century New Mexico. In this episode of our series, we take a look at life on the farm. Mary Ellen Warren was born in 1927 on the Sierra Grande Ranch where she grew up.
We had a big garden, and I remember in the springtime we had rhubarb and asparagus. We collected the lamb's quarter. It was a wild green that grew, and we got it to cook. And then we planted lettuce, cabbage, spinach, Swiss chard, turnips, radishes, beets, carrots, onions, sweet peppers, and acorn, summer squash. And then we had tomatoes, we had beans. I can remember we raised a lot of pinto beans. And then whenever they dried, well, we would get the straw out of them. We had English peas. We had Hubbard squash that we raised, and we'd put it in the cellar to use for pumpkin pies in the wintertime. And we put the cabbage in the cellar, and it lasted quite a while. We made our own sauerkraut from the cabbage, and we made hominy from the corn.
Besides growing crops, her family also raised animals.
We had a lot of cows, and we had horses, and we had one section that was, they put millet and corn in it, and of course we fed the millet made good hay for the cows and the horses in the wintertime. And then of course the corn was good for the pigs. We always butchered a beef in the fall, and then we would hang it up in the garage and it'd freeze and it'd stay good. And we usually killed a pig sometime or another during the year and butchered it, and they would cure the meat. We'd make our own sausage, and we put it in syrup buckets and then put lard over it and put that in the cellar, and it would keep. And then we also had, we made our own soap because it had a lot of fat, so we made the soap from that. We had chickens. We raised our own eggs. Now that was one thing that we sold some of. We sold some butter when we worked. But a lot of times we would milk the cows. And well, I guess there was one cow we had to milk at night because we took the calf away from her. But most of the cows we just milked in the mornings. And we had a cream separator, and it would separate the cream from the milk. We would put the cream in cream cans and ship it to Trinidad, and then we'd get the can would come back, and so would the check.
Amado Mares was born in Taos, New Mexico, but shortly after moved to the family ranch in Black Lake, New Mexico, where he would live for 9 years. This is his experience.
We used to gather strawberries.
Oh, you did?
Wild strawberries. Yeah, there was a place up here, maybe 5 miles, I don't know, 3 miles maybe from here in the mountains. And there was a place there where there's a lot of strawberries that grow wild. Everybody would go at the same time, pick. But you don't see that anymore because it's so dry, you know. She used to grow the vegetables, like no corn, but peas, red beets, the hardy vegetables that would grow here, turnips, radishes and lettuce. Another thing they did a lot that I remember, you know, when it was your turn to cut the hay and store it, because they pile it up, the neighbors would help each other. So there was never money exchange, really. This guy would help you, and then it was his turn to, so somebody would go over there and help. And there were a bunch of boys here growing up. There was no shortage of labor. Well, we had meat, because we had a lot of sheep. But sometimes my friends would hesitate to kill, because they would sell them in the fall. You wouldn't kill the animal that often. Sometimes they kill when, you know, like we get company. For sure they'd end up killing one of the sheep or a lamb or something. Or even a calf. We had plenty of meat, I guess. And we had plenty of potatoes, because my dad would grow a lot of potatoes. We used to get like 300 sacks, 100-pound sacks every fall.
Jerry Navarez was born on July 24th, 1952, in his grandmother's house in San Miguel, New Mexico. Jerry had six siblings. Growing up, Jerry's family owned 14 acres of land south of La Mesa.
Well, we would, now they're called weeds, but there's something called purslane, which we call it verdolagas. Those grew plentiful in the farm, so we collected those for food. And the quelite, which are lamb's quarters. We had cactus, which I have some still from the farm you saw who walked in the house. They're originally from the original plant on the farm.
Oh, okay.
Those are
okay.
Harvested during the growing season, and you can cook those up. Asparagus used to grow wild in the ditches. As a little kid, I used to go out and harvest the asparagus. Not anymore, because farmers use herbicides now.
Daniel Olguin and his family moved to Washington Ranch in 1944, where he lived until 1951. He describes some of the chores and tasks he had to do while living there at Washington Ranch.
Well, we had a bunch of horses. We fed high gear in bundles that you don't use that anymore.
Daniel is referring to Sudanese grain sorghums that have chalky white seeds. The specific high gear, or hagari, he describes is grown in the Southwest.
In fact, my father, they called it a rope binder. And what it would do, we would grow high gear, which is like maize. Only there's a 60-day high gear and a 90-day high gear. There was a difference. It would mature in one of it in 60 days, although it was shorter, and it didn't have the grain as big. The 90-day high gear grew taller and had a bigger clump of seeds, espiga. And my father had a row binder, and it was pulled by four horses, and it would cut the row of high gear, bundle it, and tie it with the twine. And then it would kick the bundle out, and I used to go behind that row binder, sometimes barefooted, all day. And if the bundle hung, the string hung on this arm, it would tear the bundle up. So if it hung up, I would pull it and drop it down. And I would go back and forth. And my dad was driving the horses.
Why were you barefoot?
That's Daniel's wife, Georgia, who was also present during the interview.
I didn't have any shoes.
Most of the kids didn't have shoes.
And he would row bind for other people. In fact, I know the farm, off of Lee Street, where I remember bundling for other people. And then we would take it and shock it in shocks and let it dry. And then after it dried, then you put it on the wagon and haul it into the barn. And that's what the horses ate, and cows. And one time we had a big long trough where the horses would be eating the high gear. And the goats would get in there also. And this big horse was eaten. And this goat jumped in between two horses. And this one horse grabbed the goat by the tail and swung it. I mean, that goat goes, bah! I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Part of Daniel's job was providing medical care for animals.
One time we went to Double Canyon that had a pasture over there, and the colts, they had several mares with young colts, and you have to give them some shots, and I don't remember what for, but it was a small pasture, and we'd have to rope them, and then all of us jump on them and hold them down and give them a shot. And I'll never forget, I threw my loop And I didn't catch him by the head, but I caught him by the front feet and flipped him over like this. And he hit the ground, and then he got up again, and before we could get to him, I pulled again, and he hit the ground again, and we all jumped in it and doctored him right there. That colt just turned a complete flip. Luckily, I didn't kill him.
Yeah, it could have broke his neck.
If they got cut up on the fence, what would you put on it?
There was some stuff they used to call Martin 62, and it was a black medicine that was good for worms. Back then, you used to, there was screw worm. And if there was a calf or any horse that got cut, they'd get screw worms, and then you'd have to doctor them every day. And then that medicine would keep the flies away. The calves that were born, they had, their navel was, it was bloody, and so the flies would lay the worms in the navel, and you had to ride the pastures at least every other day. And if there was any of them with screw worms, you had to rope them.
Lonnie Harper was born in 1936. Being one of nine kids, he was hired to work on neighboring farms.
Since I was the youngest of five boys, Dad really didn't need any more boys to do the farm work. And so he would hire each one of his kids out to a neighbor farmer. You know, that had maybe all girls, didn't have. And I remember starting to work when I was 12 years old for an outside farmer. And I got $5 a day and room and board. And Dad would have me a job lined up with a neighbor farmer, you know, or next in the next county. But the farmers learned that Dad's sons were hard workers. If you hired us, we worked 12 hours a day, sun up to sundown, or dark 30. But we would work. And I thought $5 a day and room and board was pretty good money. I'd buy my own school clothes and three pairs of Levi's and three white shirts. That was my school clothes.
One of his jobs on the farm was plowing the fields, as he describes in this next clip.
I started driving a tractor when I was 12 years old. John Deere Poppin' Johnny D. John Deere tractor. Two-cylinder, pop, 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 pop. But it was powerful. And it would pull a 12 to 16 foot, what we call a one-way plow. And it's developed in Kansas, and it plows down to about 3 inches deep and turns the soil over and turns the old, you know, like wheat straw and what have you, the mulch, mm-hmm. Turn it under and get it to decompose as soon as possible. And with a 12-foot, 16-foot one-way, you could plow up to 40, 60 acres a day. That beats the old one horse. Would take a month to plow 40 acres.
Francis Beeman was born in 1930 and grew up in the communities of Malaga and Loving. Both are near Carlsbad, New Mexico. His dad built a ranch house in Malaga.
Late 30s, early 40s. We had some people that worked on the farm, that lived in dugouts on the farm property. And I'm describing there how they built their dugouts. They take whatever size they wanted their house to be, and they dig down about 3 feet and take the dirt out, throw it out, shovel it off, and they cut out steps where the door was going to be. Then they take the dirt, and mix it with straw, and make adobes, put it on the outside, go up 4 feet, and now you've got 3 feet plus 4 feet, you have a 7-foot ceiling, and then they go out and get salt cedar brush and whatever they could find to put the roof on. They lived in there, the whole family would live in that one dugout. And we had about, I don't know, 7 or 8 of them on our farm. And they all worked for the Beeman Farms. They did whatever there was to do. Most of them, back in those days, most of the farm work was done with by horse teams. And they drive the cultivators or the discs or the plows, whatever. And so we had the teams of horses, and they'd do that. They'd do whatever farm work there was to do. They lived in those dugouts, and I guess they went down to the river, which is about a half a mile, to wash the clothes, get clean, take a bath. because they had to haul water up there because they had no drinking water. Dad would send a barrel of water up there to put it out for them. They'd dip it out, use it to drink in. They were poor, and I don't know how to describe it other than to say they were kind of second-class citizens. You know, they were in a situation they couldn't get out of, but they did the best that they could, and most of them were very smart and very talented. They were just being held down by discrimination.
Clinton West was born on January 15, 1941. He often goes by the nickname Doc West. His family moved to New Mexico from Westville, Oklahoma. In those days, grandparents often helped raise the children. In this next clip, Doc West reminisces about his grandfather and working on the ranch.
That's why I say he taught me a lot. He was a great guy. He would talk to me like I were a grown man. And when we moved out to the ranch, well, my job, milk the cows, feed my hogs, make sure the chickens got fed. And I'd go down to the cattle guard and I'd wait for him to come pick me up. And we'd drive down to the barn and we'd load up some feed. And we'd drive this whole ranch. It was 11 square miles, 11 sections of ranch. And you know, you'll have a little herd over here, half a dozen or more. And they'll be scattered all over the ranch. They don't just stay in one group. And we'd usually feed what they call cow cake. It's just cylinders of feed that it's wet and they shove it through an extruder and it dries and it's nice and hard. You can throw it on the ground, the cows eat it. And we'd take some hay. Well, my grandfather liked this whiskey. And we would be driving the ranch and we'd see a group of cattle and he'd honk the horn and they'd come running over and I'd get in the back and throw some cake out and some hay. And he'd look at me and he said, you want to snort, son? And I said, yeah, I think I could do with one. And he'd pull a bottle of Four Roses whiskey out from under the seat of the truck and he'd take the lid off and he'd hand it to me. And I'd take a sip, and that was the awfulest tasting stuff I ever drank in my life. But you got to man up, and then I'd hand it back to him, and he'd take a snort. And it may take us a couple of hours to get all the cattle fed, and we'd start to head back to the ranch house. And by then, we'd already had three or four snorts, and he'd bring out a package of mint Lifesavers. And he'd say, well, we better start eating this candy so your mama doesn't smell that whiskey on us.
Unfortunately, in the 1950s, a drought similar to the Dust Bowl of the 1930s hit the Southwest. One of the most important jobs Doc had was taking care of baby calves, as described in this last clip.
A couple of years, we had a terrible drought. This was in the mid-50s. And we were losing mama cows right and left. And the little calves without a mama is called a dogie. And I had to take those doggies and teach him how to nurse on a bucket with a nipple on it. Mm-hmm. And boy, you talk about a job, because they're all wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are wild. And I'd go to work and I'd have slobber and milk all over my clothes and my boots. And I got them trained, boy. They'd hear me rattle that bucket and they'd all be right there at the corrals wanting to get drinking that milk because it was just powdered milk and well water, but it kept them alive. But we had a big dirt tank on the back side of the ranch and the water got down to where there was almost no water and the mama cows weren't getting enough nourishment because there wasn't anything to eat. And they'd get out there in that mud and they'd get bogged down and they couldn't get out. And we'd drag them out and put them up in a tripod sling and we'd feed them K-Row syrup and water and penicillin and try to nurse them. We saved some of them, lost a lot of them. We probably lost 30 head in one summer. 30 head of mama cows, that's a lot of cows.
That concludes this episode of the New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project. All interviews were conducted or supervised by Kelly Jenks, Mary Alice Scott, Kayla Archuleta Brown, and Mariah Ballard. On behalf of New Mexico State University, I'm Jose Loera. Thank you for tuning in. This oral history project was made possible in part by a grant from the New Mexico Humanities Council. Additional funding was provided by the Loomis Foundation and the Southwestern Border Cultures Institute at New Mexico State University. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this presentation do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the New Mexico Humanities Council, or New Mexico State University. The full interviews are available at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. More information is available at the museum website at nmfarmandranchmuseum.org.